Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich, and thanks for watching Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the internet. First on the docket today, Chris Watts can't follow the rules in prison. Second, a YouTuber gets 40 years in prison. Third, a doctor in Virginia shows why it's always about the money. Fourth, Ghislaine Maxwell was shut down hard by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Fifth, Facebook is becoming the next Silk Road. Sixth, mistrial in the Mark Redwine trial here in Durango, Colorado. And Arizona is looking into Lori Vallow's comments made on that audio recording. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And you're going to be super surprised about this. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. If you haven't done so already, I would ask that you please hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And tonight is Tuesday, so please tune in for our Tuesday Night Live. It'll go live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time on both YouTube and Facebook. Please join us. We will obviously be talking about the news of the day, as well as we're going to talk about hearsay. What is hearsay? What isn't hearsay? And what is self-serving hearsay by the defendant? I hope you'll join us. Now, first on the docket, a man who needs no introduction to the Crime Talk group, family, whatever you'd like to call our channel here. That's right, Chris Watts. He is not following the rules in prison. Apparently, he has been written up. And wait what you hear what he has been written up for. Apparently, Mr. Watts was interviewed by the prison personnel regarding items found in another inmate's cell. He confessed. Apparently, Mr. Watts has learned nothing. That's right. We all know that Chris Watts confessed, which is a good thing, and it ultimately led to his guilty plea, which is bulletproof. It is rock solid. It is not going to be vacated in any way. I am very confident about that. It would appear as though Christopher Watts has befriended a fellow inmate by the name of Dylan Talman, and a search was done of Mr. Talman's cell. And it turns out that he had some personal property items in his cell that were supposedly that of Mr. Chris Watts. The allegations were that Mr. Watts' underwear, his petroleum jelly, some assorted toiletries, and a book were found in Mr. Talman's cell. And of course, the good correctional officers had to conduct their investigation because, let's face it, you have to have good order and discipline in a prison. Otherwise, you will have chaos. So when Christopher Watts, inmate number 674796, was questioned by the sergeant, he stated that the boxers that were labeled with his name were found in inmate Talman's room. Inmate Watts admitted to giving inmate Talman his own personal books, hygiene products from canteen, which included a toothbrush, petroleum jelly, shampoo, as well as soap. There was also some coffee and his own personal fruit of the loom boxers. Watts also admitted to calling inmate Talman's mom, having Watts' parents message or somehow text Talman's mom and his girlfriend. Now, it's against the rules for inmates to allow others to make telephone calls for other inmates. Apparently, inmate Watts, number 674796, said that he was aware of those rules, that he cannot give inmate his property, and that he didn't have permission to give away those items. Prison can be a strange and funny thing. Now, I have never been to prison other than to visit clients, but I have heard stories. Now, oftentimes people trade things back and forth, but they can't do that. And so the question is, was Chris Watts doing these favors by giving Mr. Talman? Was this some sort of friendly gesture? Was this some sort of payoff? Was this some sort of protection? We may never know, and maybe Chris Watts isn't telling us the full story for sure. But needless to say, he is showing that he cannot follow the rules in prison. Now, Mr. Talman apparently has a lengthy history, and he has a lengthy history of infractions at the Dodge Correctional Institute. He's also currently suing multiple employees at Dodge, which is how Chris Watts' incident came to light. Apparently, in this filing, Talman writes that after a correctional officer told him he was not going to heaven, that Watts had to calm him down for an hour. Talman has said in his legal filings that he will drop all of his complaints against the Dodge Correctional Facility if the state would agree to transfer him from the maximum security prison to a mental health facility. Apparently, Mr. Talman has been in and out of prison for the most of his life, and he's only 27 years old. He's never been charged with violent felonies, according to Mr. Talman, and most of his charges involve drug possession, theft, and a count of arson. Apparently, Mr. Talman is a published author, writing about his experiences both in life and in prison, and it is also purported to be that Watts and Mr. Talman are working together on a book of prayers. It is apparently through these prayers that Watts claims that he communicates with his dead family members. Although both inmates were punished for this unauthorized transfer of property, Watts lost his phone privileges for 2 weeks, and he was banned from purchasing goods at the canteen for 30 days. Although Mr. Talman was also punished and received a greater punishment, it's not exactly stated exactly what his punishment was, but needless to say, it probably included loss of phone privileges and no canteen. For those who don't know what the canteen is, it's basically the store. That's where inmates can buy cookies, candy, ramen noodle soups, anything to make their life a little more comfortable than the three meals that they're given by the state. And that canteen can be worth its weight in gold, so not being able to have it to make orders or to possess it can make 30 days go by rather slowly. Although Mr. Watts has a lifetime of days going by slowly, so what's 30 days at this point? Next on the docket, a YouTuber gets a 40-year sentence. Alyssa DeVault turned herself in the day after her trial ended and remained in jail until Thursday, when the judge opened the envelopes where he placed her sealed sentence after the jury verdict that was returned on October 15th. DeVault, who's 32 years old, was sentenced to 40 years in prison for the death of each child, a boy and a girl. She will serve this sentence at the same time. She faced 20 years to life on the charges. DeVault was accused of hiding back-to-back pregnancies back in 2017 and 2018, and that was hiding those from her boyfriend and her mother. She gave birth at her North Myrtle Beach home in South Carolina. She did that alone and then put the newborns into trash bags and threw them away. At sentencing, DeVault stated that she wanted to apologize to her family and especially to her daughters. She was hoping that one day they will be able to forgive her for what she has done. We can talk about this case in greater detail tonight on our Patreon live program this evening. But if I were to give you all the gory details of this particular case, the Google censors would demonetize us immediately. Although they probably will, just because we've referenced a couple of names already. Now, DeVault worked as a makeup artist, and she shared her work on YouTube and had some success on YouTube as well. Needless to say, she won't be making YouTube videos any longer. Next on the docket, a doctor in Virginia shows why it's always about the money. Javad Parwaz was a gynecologist, and he was found guilty on Monday of 52 counts of fraud in federal court. Dr. Parwaz preyed on his trusting patients and committed horrible crimes to feed his greed, according to the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. Prosecutors showed that the good doctor falsified records so that he could have women give birth early so that he could be reimbursed, and lied on records to skip the required 30-day waiting period under Medicaid for elective sterilization. Some patients testified that they'd suffered complications after the unnecessary procedures were performed by the good doctor. Now, the good doctor is some 70 years old, and needless to say, whatever sentence he gets will more than likely be a life sentence. He ultimately faces up to 465 years in prison, but let's face it, he's not going to get that under the federal sentencing guidelines. Now, Medicaid fraud cases are actually quite common, where doctors and other associated offices that bill Medicaid pad their bills because, well, frankly, they get reduced so low that they put on extra work to get paid so they can actually get paid what they think their time is worth. Well, guess what? You think you're the first doctor that's ever done that? No, that's not the case. Medicaid audits those matters quite closely. They will find it. You will be prosecuted. So good Dr. Perwaz, you have more to worry about now than losing your medical license and loss of hospital privileges. You have to worry about prison. Let's take a quick recess. Ladies and gentlemen, I am begging you, I'm telling you that you need to check out the people that you are going to deal with in life. The best way to do that and the easiest way to do that is through a background check. Now, if you go to crimetalksearch.com, you can sign up for a background search. And you can do one search, or you can buy a subscription where you can anonymously search as many names as you want. And when you conduct that search, you will receive a report literally while you wait. And it's going to have information regarding criminal history, any bankruptcies, personal judgments, property records, marital records. It's going to include information regarding emails, phone numbers, and social media associated with that person that you are searching. This is important. You have to ask yourself, why does my boyfriend have 6 email accounts? Why does my boyfriend have 3 phone numbers, but he's only giving me 1 number? You have to wonder what's going on. Check it out. I've said this a lot of times. Lots of people have a second life, a secret life. Make sure you're not part of that secret life. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for that background subscription service today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell is shut down hard by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. And for those keeping score at home, that's right. It's day 131 while Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell is in custody and no harm has come to her. Ms. Maxwell had filed several requests with the court wanting to file documents under seal, so none of the details of that request are currently actually known. Her request would have impacted documents that were never likely to become public in the first place, or really any instance at all. The Court of Appeals denied the request and maintains that the wall of judicial secrecy around what Ms. Maxwell was attempting to put on the record will remain. Now, the judge who's handling the matter in the Southern District of New York denied Maxwell's letter motion in a 5-page opinion that was ordered in September. Ms. Maxwell then appealed that decision to the second court, saying, "Judge, you should allow us to file secret documents under seal in certain civil cases that she's received in discovery from the government in her ongoing criminal case and sex trafficking, conspiracy, and perjury charges." She also requested the ability to reference but not file additional discovery materials produced by the government to her criminal defense team. So basically what Ms. Maxwell wanted is to have her cake and eat it too. She wants to be able to use the documents in the criminal case for the civil case and to be able to reference the civil documents in the criminal case but not make them known public to the court or necessarily to the prosecutor. Needless to say, the Second Circuit denied that request. Nice try, Ms. Maxwell. Putting up a good fight. We'll see if it's enough in the end for sure. And obviously, we give her the presumption of innocence like everyone accused of a crime that has not been found guilty by a jury or pled guilty in court. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you've all heard of Silk Road. That was the deep, dark web site that one could go to and basically buy whatever you wanted. The founder of that site is serving a life sentence for basically being a conduit to distributing large amounts of drugs all over the world via the internet. Well, you knew someone would follow, and obviously it's never gone away. They just changed sites. Now the sheriff in Yavapai County in Arizona has discovered a ring set up by a bunch of teenagers that are selling drugs via social media post. And like most of these cases, how do they get started? Somebody dies. I have a case like that right now. Somebody dies, suddenly the police get very interested in who's distributing the drugs. In this particular case here that we're talking about, the overdose death of a 14-year-old girl in Prescott Valley, this helped the police start investigating and discover this ring. The girl that passed away died on October 20th, apparently after taking suspected counterfeit pills containing, shocking, fentanyl. That's what all the kids are taking these days, ladies and gentlemen. They kill. Don't take illegal drugs. Don't take somebody else's pills. Just, it's so dangerous. The investigation determined and ultimately tracked down several juveniles and a gentleman by the name of Aaron Schmidt, who's 18, and he is likely responsible to providing fentanyl-laced pills to the 14-year-old. The media posts show that Schmidt was offering to sell THC candy ropes and blue oval pills similar to those detectives knew to contain fentanyl. There were also posts on Snapchat that appeared to show complete indifference to the girl's death. Apparently, Mr. Schmidt wrote, quote, "They ain't know how to take their drugs, yo," he wrote. "They should know the cost and expense that comes with drugs," end quote. Wow, Mr. Schmidt, that's not gonna sound very good at your sentencing hearing. Now, Mr. Schmidt and his compatriots will have some problems coming their way. Perhaps it'll be drug distribution. Maybe they won't be able to show a direct connection to the deceased teenager from the drugs directly coming from her. However, what have we said before? The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. Someone will crack and give up the entire story to the police. It will happen. And what most people don't know, most jurisdictions have charges available when somebody actually dies from illegal narcotics. Yes, you can be charged with murder for giving drugs to somebody and they die from it. Handled a case very similar to that years ago. All the kids thought it'd be cool to put their big stack of methamphetamine in a pile. One guy thought it'd be really funny to snort it all. Needless to say, it didn't turn out well. And although they tried to comfort the individual, he ultimately passed away by the following morning. Everyone involved in that case who put their drugs into the pile was charged with murder relating to the death of their friend. Nothing good comes from it. Just don't do it, ladies and gentlemen. It is bad stuff. Never had a client that said, man, I wish I'd just taken more drugs throughout my life. Next on the docket, there's been a case that's been lingering here in Colorado for quite a time. And it's down in Durango, Colorado, which is in the Southwest. And the defendant in that particular case is a gentleman by the name of Mark Redwine. He was indicted back in 2017 on the charge of second-degree murder relating to the death of his son. His son at the time was 13 years old, and his name was Dylan. And Mr. Redwine, 59, like I said, was indicted relating to murder and child abuse charges resulting in Dylan's death back in 2017. He's been held in custody ever since then. Dylan allegedly disappeared in November of 2012 while visiting his father in Vallecito, which is near Durango. Dylan's partial remains were found in 2013. Well, the trial was getting ready to get underway. They were actually in the process of selecting a jury, and guess what? Mr. Redwine's attorney have requested the mistrial, and it was granted based upon their concerns about COVID-19. In the court hearing the other day, the defense team told the judge that many members of the defense team are now showing signs of COVID-19 symptoms. The prosecution objected, given the tremendous delay that's already taken place in this particular case relating to the time that has passed over the last 3 years since Mr. Redwine has been in custody. This will further delay the matter. The court declared a mistrial, and now the jury will have to resummons in some 2,600 people with jury summons so that they can find 12 jurors, and an alternate. A new trial will be set later this week. And this was under one of the new rules that was set out by our Colorado Supreme Court, Rule 43, regarding mistrials. In this particular case, the jury was not seated yet. In fact, it was just starting. The Supreme Court created a rule, which was rather curious, because normally it takes years to change a rule by our Colorado Supreme Court. But when there was a pandemic and they realized all these people would be sitting in custody, we can't give them a trial. Therefore, we'll create a new rule that says if you can't bring in enough jurors because of a public health crisis, you can declare a mistrial. So from the date the mistrial is declared, there's 90 days in which that trial has to be brought again. There's no rule on the number of times that the court can grant a mistrial. It's interesting, but they cannot do it forever. So hopefully we wish the defense team and the prosecutors and judge and potential jurors all well. Hopefully nobody gets sick and the judge will start the new trial, hopefully after the first of the year. Next on the docket, Arizona authorities have confirmed that they are in fact reviewing their investigation into the death of Lori Vallow's third husband after an audio recording was recently made public. Now, we here at Crime Talk put up the recording last week of Lori Vallow, and in that recording, she states she was going to, quote, murder Joseph Ryan. That's her third husband. And Ryan died of an apparent heart attack 6 months before Lori Vallow made these comments. Joseph Ryan's sister, Ann Cushing, shared the recording in hopes that the police would open an investigation. In the recording, Lori Vallow explained how she would justify killing Ryan using scriptures. Ryan is the father of Daybell's daughter, Tylee Ryan, and Daybell went on to say that her feelings changed when she began attending a Latter-day Saints temple regularly. Stated that she did not have a murderous heart, and she just wanted to stop the bleeding and stop the pain. I was like, I'm either going to turn my life to the temple, or I'm going to commit murder. And of course, you know, Lori Vallow says that she turned her life to the temple and not murder, and, you know, we'll see how that's working out for her. And as we all know, Daybell's fourth husband, Charles Vallow, was shot and killed by her brother, Alex Cox, in Chandler, Arizona. Investigators also suspected Cox is involved in the disappearance of Tylee and Daybell's seven-year-old son, Joshua J.J. Vallow. The bodies, obviously, as we've discussed, were found on Chad Daybell's property back in June. The question is, are they really going to do anything about it? Frankly, I would say no. Yes, you have this recording. Could it be said that it was taken out of context? Yes. Is it an admission? It could be deemed so, but she said she didn't kill anybody. In fact, she turned her life to the church. So although the police said they're going to review their investigation, I would not expect anything to come from this. Frankly, I don't expect any further charges to come to Lori Vallow in the future, at least based upon the evidence that's been presented to date. If something changes, maybe some other admission, perhaps, but nothing at this point. If the police officers had enough to charge Lori Vallow with the death of anyone at this point, they would charge it. They simply don't. And assuming Lori Vallow keeps her mouth shut, I don't think she'll ever be charged. I know a lot of people won't like that, but that's simply my analysis based upon the evidence that we are aware of at this time. But join us this evening as we talk about it tonight when we go live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Now, for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. This is a first on Crime Talk's Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. That's right, a repeat contestant. You may recall, Ms. Jones was arrested back in September after allegedly exposing herself and pleasuring herself in front of a 7-Eleven. She made the Dumb Criminal Contestant daily final, but she did not become the winner for the week. Well, guess what? If you don't succeed, try again. That's right. Miss Jones was arrested Saturday morning after witnesses reportedly spotted her pleasuring herself near a dumpster outside the chicken joint in St. Petersburg, where she was found fully nude at the time. According to the reports, witnesses said that she was pleasuring herself in front of the dumpster completely naked, was observed on security cameras pleasuring herself while fully naked. She was arrested for exposure of sexual organs, which is a misdemeanor, and she's currently in custody on a $150 bond, which she has been unable to make. So certainly Ms. Jones has some issues she needs to work through. We're not trying to highlight or disparage her in any way, but to be a contestant on the Dumb Criminal Contestants once is a feat in and of itself, but second time, I'm not sure how anyone could possibly top this accomplishment. Ms. Jones, you are certainly in the running for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week, and then you'd be entitled to have us send you Crime Talk merchandise, like a mug. If you'd like your own, hit the link below. You got to get it now. Why? Christmas is coming. Don't rely on your significant other, spouse, to get you what you want. Everybody knows you want Crime Talk gear, like that t-shirt that's so cool with the Crime Talk across the front, the fingerprint on the back. I'm telling you, do it yourself. Put it under the tree so that your spouse gets you what you want. They look like a hero. You can't beat it. Please join us this evening. We'll do our live at 6 p.m. and then our Patreon live, where you have the opportunity to call in. All of our Patreon members will be given a number to call in so that we can continue the conversation, and we will continue to talk about it. Have a great night. We'll see you tonight.